I am quite fast at getting the ideas out, getting that first crap draft that's just always, you know, it's going to be shit, but it's like quite good at just firing that out. And then, you know, the hard work starts after that.
Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this conversation, we speak to writer-director Brooke Driver. We talk to him about his new upcoming feature mockumentary, Sweet Caroline, the process of getting the film made, and his approach to writing and comedy. This episode is sponsored by Smoke and Mirrors. Hope you enjoy.
Now then, Brooke.
Now then.
Now then.
So we have Brooke Driver in today, who's a writer-director, and he's recently just distributing a feature film that he's wrote and directed called Sweet Caroline.
Before we get into it, do you want to like set the film a little bit? Like, obviously, there's going to be spoilers in this chat anyway. So, what's the film about?
Well, it's a mockumentary about competitive big vegetable growers, and you follow Caroline, who gets her competitive big marrows plants stolen. She then gets her friends, who are private investigators on the case, who then they get kidnapped. And she thinks these two things must be involved, must be, you know, related, which quite clearly they're not. And she ends up in a sort of corruption scandal that goes all the way to the top, I guess, in the middle of it, just trying to find her marrow plants.
All the way to the top.
All the way to the top.
But what was the seed that...
You wrote that before, didn't you?
where did it come from? Where does this concept come from?
The ideas have been just germinating in my head for a while.
The thing is, obviously it's a mockumentary, but you've nailed it. It feels like I'm watching a documentary. You know, where do all these characters come from? Are they from people you've met? And where did this, like you said, Ozzy, where did this idea come from initially?
Well, I think, like, I got approached to write a documentary. The producer wanted a mockumentary. And so he sort of specifically came to me with that, like, I don't think that there's enough mockumentaries being made in the UK in sort of feature form. So that was sort of the starting point. The idea was, I was throwing it around thinking of a sort of straight feature. But I guess for me, with mockumentary these days, documentaries are so mad. Like, it's not like, if you watch Spinal Tap now, it feels like it's not as mad as like Tiger King or Bros or these documentaries that are honestly hilarious, but they're real and real characters. And so I think if you write a mockumentary now, audiences are so used to watching complete nutters that it does give you license to be like, we can really push the sort of comedy envelope while also, as long as we film it in the right way, this can be sort of like passable, you know. And obviously it's a mockumentary, but I think, you know, we had very specific rules about how we approached the filmmaking to make it like, this should feel like within the realms of possibility.
And it definitely does. It's got that balance of like that kind of lo-fi on the cuff, on the shoulder, with the action as if it's kind of unfolding in front of you. But then you've got these really nice kind of stylized portraits, sit-down moments that you would get in, you know, in a real documentary. And that for me grounds it back to what you're trying to do. And so when I was watching it, I was like, how much is this come from the edit? Because it feels so documentary-led, and how much of it was written on the page?
So I've actually been really wanting to read back the script and sort of be like, because I've lived with it for so long now, I'd love to read back the script and be like, I bet most of the jokes I didn't even write, and I'm taking
how clever
credit
are
for
you?
Them.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but, you know, everyone always says you write the thing three times, you know, you write it on the page, and then you write it with the actors, and then you write it in the edit. I guess with this, because it is a whodunit at its core, you do have to hit those beats. So every scene sort of has a reason in the story. So you can't just do... And often I find the worst mockumentaries for me are the ones where they just... they sit with comedy actors and they just let them riff and riff and riff and riff. And I think like things like I didn't like Best in Show. My co-director Finn loved it, you know, but I find sometimes they just sort of they let this we had like we'd let the actors riff because they're so funny and they're so good. But also there is a sort of, I like to think, a tight whodunit script in there with beats that it's like, you have to hit this beat, you have to hit this beat. And then, you know, they would bring their flair to it. And you know, I think genuinely a lot of the really laugh out loud moments were brought by the actors.
It's tight. It's a tight script. Yeah. It is tight. I'll definitely...
It's tight.
Definitely tight.
Yeah, I was wondering that though, watching it. Like, there's like one scene where she says like something like two cocks, and then the thing pans down on the window shelf, and it's two, you know, cocks there. Like, is it things like that? Is that specifically written? Obviously, with the production design, is it, or is it?
No, that one was Joe riffing, definitely. Because those were just, you know, those are just there in the house, and that comedy also is brought by the cameraman. You know, that would have been Joe Guy, our DOP. You know, he just tilts down onto it, and it's like perfect. And I think the camera in this format, the camera can really add so much to the comedy, which is so fun. The little zooms, you know, they can be really overdone, and you know, things like Succession do them like so unbelievably well. But you know, the cameraman himself gets to be like part of the comedy, which is just great.
Yeah.
And their approach, you know, the camera team, Joe Guy and Jack, you know, they built this whole camera rig specifically for this. It was like taking like broadcast lenses, like the with the servo zoom on them, you know, but putting them onto, you know, cinematic cameras. And so you can really be like really flexible with like how you're zooming in and out and stuff, and it was just like, it was really, you know, I loved their approach.
Had you worked with them previously?
Yeah, I've worked. So Jack, who was BCAM, is one of the founders of Deadbeat Films, who co-produced the film, and Joe Guy is a DOP who I've worked with sort of a lot.
So you've got to kind of know that they're in the same sensibility as you. The same, like, yeah. Are you funny? Do you get this?
Yeah.
Because exactly. if you were someone who doesn't, then they're not going to react in the same way.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they're playing a part in the comedy.
One thing I wanted to ask as well, because obviously, you know, Sweet Caroline, riffing off Sweet Caroline.
Mm-hmm.
When you wrote it, did you write it going like, we need to get the rights to this track to use?
Mm.
Because obviously it's at the end of the film, and it kind of, you know, it's that kind of penultimate moment, and it's great and celebratory.
Yeah.
But like, I just wondered, would it have been different if you couldn't have got that track?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's like, what you can't. Everyone's waiting for that song if you go into a sort of comedy called Swede Caroline. And luckily, Finn, the producer and co-director, has sort of worked his magic and managed to license the track, because I don't know what we would have done. I actually don't know what we would have done. We would have had to re-edit it.
But did you go into it knowing you had the rights? Or did
no.
you just... Oh, right, okay.
No, we made the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
But he was confident. He's you know, he's done this all before, so he knew what was possible. But, yeah.
So take us back, because I think what we get on here is, well, we get a lot of directors listening who are also writing their own stuff,
mm-hmm.
And also have ambitions to make their own films. Talk me through the process of you getting this made. Did you write this off of your own back at first? Did someone come to you with a commission? I know you touched on that before. Let's talk about the process of like the start of this project and how you got it made. And also what you've learned along the way, because that's another important thing that I think people like to know.
So for me, it's like, you know, I'm primarily a screenwriter. So obviously I've co-directed this. This is my first thing that I've directed, but I've got a few credits as a screenwriter. And I was initially just on it to write. You know, I'd worked with Finn of Bellstone Pictures before, and he's the you know, the only producer I sort of knew within my remit who was... Who, my, my circle, I guess, the wider sort of circle that I was like, he's actually making films, you know, like I work with Deadbeat across loads of commercial stuff. I know lots of people working within this, but I'm like, this guy's making, you know, film after film. It's like he's really knocking them out, and he's a young guy, you know, he's younger than me. And he's got sort of 6 films under his belt. And I'm like, you know, low budget indie films, the kind of stuff that I want to make and stuff that I like. So then I'd collaborated with him on a few projects, TV project that got really close with Disney and didn't get off the ground, which was a real shame. And then another film project of which I was brought in to be one of the writing team. And then he came to me and said, I want a mockumentary for the reasons I said before. And he said, I've got this idea. It's about a clown, a kids' party entertainer. And I sort of was like, okay, cool, cool. And then I was like, well, what about this? Like, not that. he'll agree with that. We laughed about it. I didn't just shoot him down. But I was like, I've actually been working on this script and I've had a little think about it. And it could be a mockumentary because it's, you know. And he was like, yeah, I love it. Let's do it. Let's work out how it could be a mockumentary. And then, he was saying he wanted to direct it because it's his directing debut as well. He's produced X number of films, but he wanted to direct. And then he asked me to, if I wanted to co-direct it with him, which we have contrasting memories of how that came about, but I'm pretty sure I'd made a little mockumentary about dog fondlers.
I was showing Craig that.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. Yeah. So
a little, as you do.
A little sort of like a take on those like really serious, like Stacey Dooley, BBC Three, you know, investigates like paedophile rings or something. But I was like, finding the people who track down people who fondle dogs. and I think it's like the funniest thing I've ever made. I love it. and so after that, he was like, well, do you want to, you know, co-direct this? And I was like, yes, if this is happening, 100%. And then, so meanwhile, I'm working at Deadbeat Films, who are primarily a commercials production company, but work, you know, festival films, music videos, all of this sort of good stuff, but are complete cinephiles. Like, they want to make movies, you know. We have our meeting of like, well, what do we want from this year? And it's like, well, we want to make a feature. And I'm sort of like, well, if we want to make a feature, I've got this feature in development. Why doesn't Deadbeat, you know, get involved? And Finn was open to it. You know, he's a very collaborative guy. And, you know, Deadbeat had a very strong year and was like, we can put some cash into the film, co-finance the film and come on as a full co-production. And so that's sort of where that's how the whole thing got off the ground. Basically, you know, people who really wanted to make movies taking a punt.
Taking a jump.
And is that where the funding came from? Just independent productions?
Yeah, so it's co-financed by Bellstone and Deadbeat.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
That's incredible.
So it's a really tight family then as well. That's great. Do you mind me asking how much it costs to make it?
No comment. I think I actually am.
I will find out that.
Yeah. Well, I actually don't know what the final figure is, firstly, because I don't know things like how much actors
yeah, paying, marketing distribution. Like
but not got an answer for you.
Crazy. So. I think that's a really good insight to getting something off the ground as well. And like you said, I think it's a lot of it comes from having a good producer behind you as well.
100%.
I feel like since I've known you, Brooke, you're very good at, like, it seems like, maybe I'm wrong now, but it seems like you're quite fast at writing. Is that true? Am I kind of hitting something there? Like, as in, like, I feel like I remember I had one meeting with you, like back in like 2014 or something, and I think I just spat a short film idea out, and then I like got the train home, and you went to a cafe and you just sent me in straight away, and I was like, what? Yeah. How have you just done that?
How many lines can you write in a minute?
I was like, that is very fast.
Yeah.
But do you feel like it does come a little bit organically if you feel like an idea is there and it gets you excited?
Definitely, definitely. And I often find like I have to sort of write it I have to put quite a lot of effort before I even realise how, you know, if it's any good. Like if something excites me, you know, I've just written 100 pages of a script and realised I don't think this is actually any good. And it's like really like quite disheartening. But I am quite fast at getting the ideas out, getting that first crap draft that's just always, you know, it's going to be shit, but it's like quite good at just firing that out. And then, you know, the hard work starts after that.
Yeah.
When you have to be like, oh no, this is all.
And did you come at writing, did you like study writing or read anything about it, or did you literally just write?
So I've always been like a writer of things. Do you know what I mean? Like I have like diaries that just like, you know, just everywhere. I'm always writing stories and things. And then I actually had quite a funny, when I was studying at university, I did a year abroad in South Carolina. Like it was so ridiculous. I was studying in Leeds, studying English. But when I was over there, you didn't have to they didn't tell you what modules you had to do. And like no one from Leeds University knew what I was doing. So I took swing dancing as a module. I took a dance called The Shag, which is like a local. So I literally have like shagging on my report from that year. And then there was this screenwriting run by this guy called Northrop Davis, who I actually still speak to. He was a great sort of mentor, but he'd like sold scripts to Spielberg and stuff like this, you know. And he was running these screenwriting courses, and I just took like every single one of them that year. And I was like, this is sick. I love this. Because I didn't enjoy my degree at all, you know. I was doing the bare minimum to get by, kind of thing. And then suddenly with this, I was like the guy who was staying after class and like talking to the tutors and like doing the extra reading and all that. And I was like, oh man, I wish I was studying this because I love it. And then since then, it's just, you know, I'm still doing the same amount of writing maybe, but just plowing it all into sort of script ideas. And then it's almost like through that I've sort of fallen in love with cinema in a way that I didn't necessarily appreciate before. It's like when you start writing and seeing how people communicate this visually, it's like, oh, you know, I love that as well. And I love making it, and I want to do, you know, work with actors, and it's so collaborative. And in a way that if you're writing, you know, anything else, you don't have that collaborative element of like the editor wrote this film, you know, like the actors wrote this film, like everyone sort of had such a big input on it that I just think that's so cool.
And did you got it in a way that like, you know, like some screenwriting books would tell you, do you know, like the hero's journey type thing? Would that ever cross your mind when you're writing, like, okay, I'm, you know, we're 20 pages in, something, you know, the exciting incident needs to happen or something. Do you ever think like that? Or is it more of an organic thing?
I actually, like, always go back to the books loads. Yeah, like, or like, I think you've got to know, you know, it's classic, but, like, know the rules to break them and stuff. And so, like, I do sort of, sometimes if I think, like, what's going wrong, there often is, like, an answer in like, oh, you just, like, you're just taking way too long in your setup. You know what I mean? It's like these things, I don't think that there's like a paint by numbers for writing, but I do think that these, we tell stories and certain ones really work. And there's like there is a sort of reason to that. And I think that those books are more like analyzing, like I more go into like similar films. Like I'm writing a film right now that is kind of like, It's quite similar to like a sort of about a boy sort of big daddy sort of narrative wise, and I think I spend a lot of time like going in to try and work out why those ones work, you know, watching them back and being like, okay, this is, you know, I do a lot of that, copying people, basically.
Yeah, but that's it, just watching other films and seeing like why did this work.
Yeah,
do you ever like would write the scenes down, saying like, before you even start writing, is there a big process before you even start writing the script? Like putting scenes up or just being like, this should happen, this should happen, and kind of having your own mind map before you even started going like, interior, this, you know, properly getting it to paper.
Yeah. I've got the whole thing written in like note form kind of thing before I go through. But then, you know, I don't think there's like one way to do any of these things. That's just sort of how it comes out with me. It's like hammer at the keyboard and it will not really make, you know, it'll all be in sort of garbled thing that I can explain. Mm-hmm. And I actually, the funnest thing, this is fun, I take that and then I will pitch that, the whole feature breakdown, and it will take like an hour. And I did this to the Deadbeat team before Swede, and it's like sat them down, and I did like a pitch of that, which is like, and then this happens, and she says this, and he says this, and there's gonna be this thing, and then it goes like this, you know, and it's like a one man show of like kind of reading your notes and kind of trying to tell the jokes that are gonna happen, and it was like the funnest thing ever. It was like really fun. We've done it with quite a few of our various sort of scripts and stuff now, where it's like, right, do the pitch session, and everyone sits down and like, you know, has a coffee and watches you try and tell the story and see if it can keep people.
Because if you can't tell it, you know, you've got to really bring people into the world, right? Especially the pitch, that's like,
yeah, exactly,
this is it, this is what's in my head, and if you can get people on board.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can't get people excited by the idea at that stage, I have a funny table read story where, so the first script I sold, it was like, this is a bit of a name drop, but I sold it to like the producer of Harry Potter, and you know, I'd never sold a script before and all this, and she organised a table read with the Cambridge Footlights, they're called the Footlights, the comedian, the, you know, all of the comedians are all from the Tea Lights, Footlights, something like this. Anyway, they all came down, they came to do this big table read at her house, and it was an amazing experience. It was the first time I'd ever seen my scripts performed, you know, and obviously it was just round the table, but you know, everyone took a role and all of this, and I got so much from it, and I was just sat there like writing notes the whole time, and I thought it was the best experience. So I wrote the next draft, worked on it for a few months, and I was like, right, before I do this, I want to organize a table read, and I just invited all of my mates round, and I gave them, printed out scripts, gave everyone a script, gave everyone a character or two characters, and I'd made everyone dinner, you know, so we all like had everyone had dinner, all this. Anyway, started reading, I just realised, like, my mates can't read. Like, they literally cannot read. Like, half of them are dyslexic. Like, they stumbled over every single joke. Like, it was like, painful to the point where I just gave up.
This is what's gonna happen next week.
Are you doing
one for Craig? Literally, brilliant. And it's so great. You just said that because I think that's the point. It's like,
yeah, but we're all dyslexic.
Yeah,
well,
you guys can't fucking read it.
I gave up at page 30. We literally gave up by page sort of 30. It was like, we're not getting anywhere. I've wasted all my time. Why did I cook you?
I'll let you know what page we get to next week.
Hilarious.
Page 8.
Yeah, it turns out actors and performers actually are really worth their soul.
Literate.
Yeah. Maybe so did it help you in any way then, that read-through, or not?
No.
Nah.
No, not at all. Good luck.
Call
good
it
luck.
Off.
Call yeah. off. Maybe just send a message and say, just checking, you can all read. And then just see if they get
it. I'll send everyone the script beforehand, Craig. From that, once you've got this script, the funding's come in, how then do you cast this? Do you go, we need a familiar face? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because if the funding's there, you know, usually to get more funding, you get someone who's popular face or whatever. Were you thinking of Joe Hartley first?
Yeah. Joe was like, oh, you know, she's such an amazing actor. She's so we just felt she was so perfect for this. She's also just like, when I think of sort of indie cinema in this country, there's sort of certain actors and actresses that you think of, and like,
yeah,
you know, working with her, the pitch to her was very, you know, she had to take a real punt on the film, which is what you never really appreciate with actors, is like, they're putting their face to something that might be shit, and you might look, you,
so, the first time,
yeah, exactly, so know? They come and meet two first time directors. She said she read the script and she got approached by her agent, who said, look, there's no real money, it's a script about vegetables, do you want to have a read? And she says she read it, and she read the first sort of 20 pages and was like, great, set up a meeting, let's have a meeting. But she's taking a chance. And so we had this like meeting with her, and you know, now I know Jo so well, and I love Jo, and she is just like, she is the loveliest person. But I remember being really nervous going into that, thinking like, come on, we might get Jo Hartley on this project. That would be sick.
And it instantly makes that script more commercially sellable, you know?
Yeah.
You're talking about a different side, which is getting the right names attached if you need to, you know, because with getting the actors on board,
we had a casting agency, ET Casting, and they were great,
yeah,
like really great. And I think we've got an amazing cast, like we do.
Yeah.
We've just got, you know, we've got really great names. We've got people, you know, even down to sort of like the smaller roles, like, you know, Alice Lowe was on my set, and I was like, oh, I remember watching Sightseers and, you know, Ben Wheatley Sightseers, and thinking, like, who is that actor? She's amazing, you know? And then it's like 10 years later or whatever it is, and she's like on set for our film. And, I think Emily and Zeta managed to get our casting agents, got phenomenal cast, and it helps, you know, where as soon as you get like Jo Hartley's people want to work with her, and then it's like a snowballing thing. It's,
yeah,
like you find out, oh, they're attached, you know, and then people want to be part of it, people want to come and give a few days, because they're like, it adds credibility. It's like, you know.
Was she the first person?
Cool. Yeah, we went for her, and then we got Kellen and Richard, who are
Kellen's great.
Kellen, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he plays her neighbour, Willie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great, but he came to set, you know, he's like won a BAFTA, and he's like, he just came off directing Rebel Wilson in her first serious role. He's a you know, serious director. And he came onto this set, and I was like so intimidated at the beginning, like, oh god, what am I doing?
And it's crazy because his character's like the sweetest man,
exactly, the sort of sweet, quite simple, like lovable character. Casting is so important, and it's so hard. I think we didn't award. No, I was going to say we won an award for the casting. We got nominated for award for our casting.
It'll be coming, mate. When the film's coming out.
When's the film coming out?
April. April is coming out in cinemas on April 19th, and then it'll be coming out on Sky and Now TV later in the year.
Cool. So you showed this film last year, didn't you? Because you went to watch it. And I think this is a really, so you had like an intro screening for people, mm-hmm, to watch it and then give notes on feedback.
Yeah, yeah.
Love that. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I did. I invited a sort of...
What notes did you make?
Ignored my notes.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, did you watch it? But did you watch it back?
Did you throw his notes in bin?
Yeah, I saw the name on top of it and I thought, nah,
fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Invited him out.
What were
courtesy?
Your notes? I'd love...
I think my note was... I wanted like a recap at the end with the interviewees, like the girl who was making the film.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted something at the end because we saw her at the start, yeah, we'd heard a voice.
You know what?
Critique.
Some of the notes were like, right, you need to do another day's filming, which would have been your one. And those were sort of like producers immediately like, those ones off.
Yeah. Great hindsight, mate.
Everyone leaves notes about what they're thinking.
You are sort of specific questions about things that you want to hear about. Mm. And you also just, you know, like, you live in this script. You think it makes total sense. You're sort of like, you ask them to be like, what happened to this character? You know, like, what do you think happened to... And if they're writing, like, things that just, like, what? You know, that... And it, you know, in general, at that stage, it seemed to, like, the whole thing did kind of make sense, which was good. And we did get really, really valuable notes.
And I guess it's more a case of notes as well, that maybe you can kind of go back into the idea and then... massage out some.
Yeah, for sure.
I found it funny because the fictional filmmaker on the film was in the screener. It was your voice, Brooke, wasn't it?
Oh yeah,
yeah, behind the camera. Which you kind of, like, first time I heard it, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I hadn't done the, like, ADR session with her yet. Yeah. So I'd just been like, all the questions were being asked by me,
which was quite funny. Yeah. Listening to it back.
Yeah, it wasn't you know, ready to go. But
how many days shooting was it in total? If you can remember,
I think it was 20, something like that.
Oh, wow.
20 days.
And was that...
I bet that flies by.
Was it in London?
Yeah. No, Winchester, or just outside of Winchester. Yeah, it does. It flies by. I think we did 20 days and two pickups. No, 18 days and two pickups.
Did you, with the actors again, did you, from your notes, did you have performances or people in mind that kind of dictated how they would play the characters? Like, did you have someone in mind for Joe? Because I wonder if Joe is like that in real life. That's what, I don't know, I've never met her. But she seems like a pretty chilled, down-to-earth kind of lady.
Yeah, I think...
Because the styling's quite specific as well, like what she's dressed.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was quite like a, it's quite an iconic look she's got.
And she really, you know, her and Ellie Walker, who was doing the styling, the costumes, you know, they really, Joe took a keen interest in, like, what am I going to wear that's like, you know, you want that sort of, like, I don't know, iconic, like, Big Lebowski kind of something that you look at and think, this is a cool look that she's got going on. So she took such an interest in that. That was, like, really part of her character building. What was the question?
More about, like, did you think of any other characters you could... Is, say, like, Big Lebowski, was that a character, the dude, for example, would you say to her, is that a character?
Was his favourite film?
Me too.
Is it?
Absolutely.
Well, that's what I actually...
It's not my favourite film.
No, I'm joking.
I
love it, though.
Now I have to say it's not mine.
Well, that's what I actually took away.
I love it, but...
I took away from watching this film because, well, you're quite into the... I mean, I rarely watch comedies because you quite like the kind of... this kind of style of film as well, don't you?
I like things that are daft, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
But yeah, me too. Like, but I don't think that I can make a truly daft film. Like this is quite... Like, I think the daftest thing is the name, like Swede Caroline, and I've gone back and forth. You know, people love the name, and, it, you know, it's a bit... It's eye-catching, and I sometimes have things where I'm like, that's sort of more daft than the... Like, I think the film has maybe more heart than that sort of sounds... gives it.
But I think that's where you kind of... I really love scripts like that because you can lead an audience into a false sense of security. So say, like, about you were mentioning you're writing something like similar to About a Boy. It is kind of... there's silly quotes in there, but it's at the end of it, it's really heartfelt and really it gives you a punch in the gut.
Yeah,
because it leads you into this, like, comfortable film that really sidewinds you.
But sorry, just to clarify, when I said I can't make a really dark film, that wasn't because I'm like too good at making serious things. That is, like, I my genuine favorite film is Dumb and Dumber. Like, I absolutely love Dumb and Dumber. I think, like, Zoolander, Dumb and Dumber, I think those sorts of things, like, make me laugh so much. But I don't think I'm sort of good enough at that kind of, that level of, like, physical comedy and that sort of thing, and am drawn very much to stories that are a bit more of a sort of emotional thread to them, even if, like, the writing's meant to be funny.
Again, from watching the film, I actually think that you've got a much more subtle tone of voice as well. You know, there's a subtlety to these characters. It's not like some of this stuff that were coming out, it were almost whispers that caught me out, you know.
Well,
It were just little moments.
Little lines.
Someone said, "Oh, I feel like I'm feeling quite sore." And then obviously the couple next door who are always at it, she was like, "Yeah, I feel sore too." It's these little moments that I thought were great. And so
again, I think improvised. Ashley B. Yeah. Not, you know,
I give you an opportunity.
I wish I'd written it. But yeah. Aisling B again, like, you know, she's like, so, you know, what an incredible cast we had. I just like literally couldn't believe it, you know.
I was going to say then, but again, based on the emotive thing, I just love the thread with Joe's character about her husband joking about the death and then it happening. And you must have laughed a little bit when she's joking about death and then is it testicular cancer? It's gone. Yeah. It was not a funny subject.
Yeah.
But I thought when you wrote that, I was like, Brooks wrote that.
I know.
Because you know what I mean?
It's probably the funniest cancer.
Yeah, if we were talking about cancer. Cancer's not funny. But the funny.
Hey, cancer's not funny.
Of course, none of the cancers are funny, but like cancer of the cock and balls would be funnier than the cancer of something that wasn't.
And even her neighbour in the scripts like jokes about it and thinks he's taking it too far. Yeah. But me knowing you'd written that, I was like, that's even funnier.
Well, you were watching me giggling as I'm writing it.
Oh, big time, yeah. Yeah. But then it becoming like an insight to Joe's character even more and the vulnerability of her rather than being this cool as a cucumber woman.
It is funny when you laugh at your own, like, you have to be able to like laugh at your own jokes, but it is just funny when you're just sort of sat there thinking. That's
funny. You know when you obviously, I think, you know, comedy is very subjective, and so when you're writing and you're kind of giving your script to people to read, and you're kind of watching them read it and they don't laugh, do you almost have like a? Did you get that?
Yeah, my
did that land?
Yeah, my wife is like the you know, she doesn't work in anything like film or anything like this. She's just like a very like harsh critic. Like, she's got the things that she likes and the things that she doesn't like. And I was like,
ringing bells. This
first time I showed her a cut, I was just sat there like just watching her reaction. She just watched through the whole thing, like complete silence, didn't laugh once. Gets to the end, she goes, "That's quite funny, that."
And that's why I love her.
And I was like, you know, just literally the whole time thinking, God, she's not laughing. She's not even smiling, you know. I got to stop on that and that gag, I think.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the co-directing thing.
Yeah.
Because obviously getting put in, you're coming in with a director who's already made a few films. How do you designate responsibility on set?
I think, like, co-directing is obviously a really hard thing to do. And, you know, it's why, like, all the co-directing partners seem to be, like, siblings or, you know. But it really was quite organic.
So it wasn't a conversation before and being like, okay, well, I'll speak to the actors and I'll give the actors direction, but I'll sit back and see out what how they're delivering the lines or anything like that.
Not really. We have a really good working relationship, me and Finn. We've collaborated, you know, in various ways on lots of projects before, and so we kind of trusted each other in the notes that we'd be giving. You know, like, I think the worst thing would be, imagine if you were co-directing with someone and they sort of step up to give notes and they give notes and you're thinking, oh God, what? No, that's the opposite, you know. But, you know, hand on heart, I feel like that just didn't happen. You know, it was kind of like we were very aligned on our image, on like the image we had in our head of what we were wanting. We talked before so much. We spent so many days going through our script and really understanding what we were, you know. And I think if you co-direct, it will come out. It's not entirely your thing, you know. But it's like if you'd have been left to your own devices, it would be slightly different, you know. But that's sort of quite cool in a way. As we were saying before, it's like the whole collaboration is you're collaborating with everyone, you know. So I really enjoyed co-directing with him.
Yeah. it's one of them things where I just was like, couldn't. Mm. Well, it's like saying I couldn't do it until you actually do it, and then see it. But it's about being aligned.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think if you really both trust each other and are completely aligned on what you're trying to make, then it's possible.
So
nice. And then, all right. So then we've made the film. Yep. You co-directed it. You cast it. It's come out. It's great. It's funny. Marketing.
Again, Finn. I mean, I'm blowing his trumpet a lot on this podcast, but he deserves it.
I lent on him,
you know. Yeah, exactly. Like he's, you know, he's sold whatever 5 films before. You know, he's handled distribution in different ways, and I think, you know, distribution for a film like this is tough. Like you have to get people who believe in the project. We won an award at Rain Dance, which was good. You know, I think all of that sort of stuff helps. And Sky bought into it. They got it, you know, and they you know, it's, you know, that's really helpful when someone really sort of gets it and they want the, you know, they want it. So that's been really helpful. Bellstone, his company, have partnered with Picnic Pictures, who are they, Picnic Pictures or just Picnic, who are partnering on the distribution, and they're great. It's Nicola Piercy, who was the ex president of Lionsgate, has set that up. And I think this is only their second film that they're doing the distribution on. So she's great. And I think once those partners had come together, you know, Sky and Picnic, and then it was like, okay, because it's been a while, you know, and I've been like, I've sort of had moments where I've just there like, when is this coming out?
You know? Yeah, because did you ever have that thought where you were like, well, as long as we get it out to people, whether it be straight to streaming, I mean, because the cinema releases like can be very, very rare, even for big films. So it must have been quite a.
But this is a very indie cinema release. Yeah. You know, I don't know how many cinema it will be nationwide, but it will probably be like, you know, I'm not sure, sub 100 cinemas potentially. And also, like, there's even the strategy in this. I knew nothing about distribution. I knew nothing about all this, but like what cinemas you're actually going to place it in. Like, you know, we think that like rural communities are going to really like this film, you know, because it's about that British countryside kind of thing. I think it could do well there.
Is that where you're placing it then? Is there like a map and people go like,
so
right,
it's
okay,
not,
let's.
Yeah, it's not. That won't be decided until closer to.
In Pontefract.
Pontefract Escape. Cineworld.
Castleford.
Oh, yeah.
It's where we're from.
Yeah. I got that. Yeah, we're not, you know, that won't be decided until closer to the actual launch, because there's all things about like how films that are doing well and, you know, them keeping on their runs and stuff. So it is, you know, flexible until basically next month. And we've got, you know, PR company out there now, like, you know, trying to get Joe and Ashley on the One Show and all of that sort of stuff. It's all part of it. Yeah. It's this whole new world.
Yeah. I mean, you got a quote from Shane Meadows, mate. That is pretty sick,
epic, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Shane Meadows like sent this email, and I honestly, Joe Hartley called me up like so excited, and I remember where I was. I was driving like round that big roundabout in Wembley. She's like, I've got to read you this. She like reads this email from Shane Meadows, and it's just glowing, and it's like, it, you know, I mean, I know the thing by heart. At one point he says, has all the hallmarks of a watch again and again British comedy classic. And I was like, ugh. And I was driving like literally just punching the air like, yes. Because who cares what anyone thinks about your film? But like, Shane Meadows liked it. It's like, the thing could tank. You know, it's not like it's going to be watched. It's not going to be the big blockbuster of the year, but Shane Meadows
the guy that you like watched, you know, his films, thinking, God, I'd love to make something like that.
To round this up, mm-hmm. Any advice for first-time filmmakers?
First-time people wanting to make first feature.
Yeah.
God, so much. So I feel like I've learned so much, like, but I just wouldn't even know like where to start. It's, I guess the thing that everyone wants to know is like, how do you get these sorts of things? How do you get the idea off the ground? And I think you just have to surround yourself with people who are as motivated and excited by getting films made as you are. And, you know, like, you're going to, you know, whether that's producers who are going to put, because people have to put in so much time and energy and money and stuff behind these ideas. They have to, I think when it's like indie cinema, they have to really love it. You know, they have to be those sort of workhorse, passionate people, you know. And if you find them like you know, with Finn and the Deadbeat team, I feel like I've just been so lucky to have those people. And even, you know, the crew, because we work primarily in commercials, and so many of our crew on every department pretty much want to be doing these films. You know, it's not like we didn't pay them to do the film, but they all went above and beyond, because it was like, they want to be doing this, you know. And I think if you can surround yourself with those people, you're in a good place, you know.
Well, I'd say, you know, at the end of all that, listeners watching, if you can try and suss out where it's getting released.
Listeners watching,
okay, yeah. 19th of April, get watching Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, genuinely, go to the cinema and watch it. I think, like, we genuinely need people to go and watch the film.
For Brooke's sake.
Get there now.
For Brooke's career, go and watch the film, will you?
Guys, if you've made it this far.
It's funny. It is funny. But his wife didn't laugh reading it, but it is funny.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. Thank you so much for coming on. That was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, nice weather.
Loved it.
Lads.
All right. Cheers. Catch you in a bit.
Bye.
Bye-bye.